Blog Talk Radio.
Sun's on my back, winds in my ears. I haven't felt this good in years. See all the people in the field all lined up in a row. We got a couple more long hours of work before it's time to go.
Hello and welcome to Those Darn Guys Who Happen to Be Therapists. I'm psychologist Dr. Jim Weaver, along with couples therapist Dr. David Sanford, and we are without psychotherapist Hughes Kraft today. He's out camping, I think, and vacationing. So we will be boldly going, David and I, out into the potosphere once again, where no therapists have gone before, or failing that, hopefully putting the fun back in dysfunctional and bringing some insights into the issues of life, love, and the search for a decent relationship. And we will be joined once again toward the end of the show by psychologist Dr. Mark Kiefner, clinical director of Bayside Neurorehabilitation Services, with some cutting-edge brain research called A Minute on the Mind. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you, Jim.
Hey, listen,
we got an interesting topic today, do we?
We do indeed. We're going to talk about is open conflict ever okay in a relationship? So do you want to give your opinion on that, or shall I give mine?
Why don't you start out, since you've done already, and I'll just come in on it.
All right. I think it's very important to have open conflict in relationships, because if you've got conflict, you've got a couple of choices, buried conflict or open conflict. And I think the open conflict is the preferable one, because otherwise it's buried and festers and the issue doesn't get resolved.
How would it be if I gave some reasons against open conflict that people might put forward?
Then you and I could have a conflict. That would be good. And open conflict is always better.
but you wouldn't know about it. I would just sulk a little. That's all.
And, yeah. Which is
and
what you do
you'd
a lot.
Never know. You'd never
deal
know
with it. I should bring it up and talk about your sulking, but I bury it.
Well, if you were polite, you wouldn't bring it up. You'd say something's wrong with David.
Yeah.
And I'd say no, nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong, Jim. There's no problem here at all. and then you might drop it.
Right.
You might just say, well, he's sometimes like that.
Yeah, what can I do?
And then within an hour, say, or maybe less, or maybe more, I will have forgotten about it.
Uh-huh.
So there's one way, or one alternative to open conflict, which is keep it to yourself, and you can count on the fact that the weather is going to change in a little while, and just keep it to yourself, and pretty soon the weather will change, and you won't even remember that you felt badly about something.
Right.
That's one way, right, to avoid open conflict. One alternative.
Yeah. I think that's true. But if you live in New England, right about this time,
sure.
If you listen to this live, you know what I'm talking about. You live in New England. The weather doesn't change. It's rainy every day.
every day, week after week. People are building and starting Noah's Ark in their backyards. I mean, it's just awful.
Yeah. So,
what has that got to do with anything, however?
No, you were saying it was going to change. And maybe, I agree with you that there are some things that may not be worth bringing up, and it may be a minor irritation that's a passing irritation. And you shouldn't bring it up because you don't need to. But if there's something festering for you, or something that seems to be an ongoing thing that bothers you, bring it up, because otherwise it doesn't get addressed.
Okay, you're making, and I'd like to highlight a distinction that you're making.
Okay.
And you're saying, yes, there are times when maybe keeping it to yourself because it's minor and it'll go away after a little bit is a good idea. But then you said if it's ongoing, namely, it either doesn't go away at all, you continue to feel badly about it, or around this particular issue, every time it comes back again, it's ongoing in that sense, right?
Right.
Or it festers, meaning it's just on your mind, nagging at you a lot. Then you're saying it's not a good idea.
Right.
Just sort of keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's another one. Another one is, well, you're intending to become a more caring person, and you take your spiritual life seriously, mm-hmm. and one of the practices that you have is turning the other cheek. So according to this view, if there's something that you do that distresses me, I do work on myself about that. I refer mm-hmm. that issue back to myself, and I do work on myself. I say, well, why is that a real problem for me? And how can I learn from this problem? And how can I grow from dealing with it myself and so forth, right?
Right.
So I'm working on it. I'm not trying to forget it. I'm not saying the weather's going to change, it's going to go away any minute.
Right.
I'm using it as an occasion for working on myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
What do you think of that one?
I'm flabbergasted. I think that's a fabulous idea.
Slowed you down there for a minute.
Dude, I was going full steam ahead. And,
right.
Yeah, really. So we've got a couple of people on the chat who are posting there, and I urge them to either call in their questions or write down their questions, and we'll try to get them on the air.
Absolutely, we'd love to hear from them.
Yeah. So back to our topic. Okay, people on the chat says that she, or he, I'm not sure which, recommends BMT actions of appropriate proportion in relation to the actions of the person. Okay, I'm not sure what BMT means. Do you know behavioral? I don't know what BMT means.
B is in boy, MT?
Yeah. So anyway. We'll try to
behavior modification training, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Right.
Maybe that person will clarify it. I'm still listening, and we'll clarify it.
Right. So, behavior modification. I think that's a very good point. We talk about open conflict, but the idea. What kind of open conflict, and how do you go about it in a way that's effective? And what Molo is saying is that it needs to be in proportion to the actions of the other person. So if it's too timid, then you can't have a resolution. If it's too aggressive, that gets in the way of having a resolution.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm calling from home and somebody is calling me, but I think that I'll just kind of plow through it here. Were you speaking about the spiritual issue?
Was I?
The one that I raised about to work on it by yourself?
Yeah.
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 I mean, I, I think that there are occasions where that is legitimate, but in other words, the position that I took there for a moment legitimate one, but it requires a great deal of self-understanding because it's so easily open to self-deception. You know, behind a certain kind of willingness to work on oneself, sometimes is the sense that, well, my needs and my view are not important here. Mm-hmm. I'm the lesser important person, so I'm not going to push it, and I'm not going to go forward with my own needs or my own position. I'm going to keep it. All within, so to speak. So I think there is a danger in that position that it does hide a degree of something other than self-acceptance, for sure.
Yeah, David. One of the people on the chat has called in. The one Mola was talking about the behavior modification techniques. So let's open the mic and talk to Mola.
Okay.
Hello, Mola.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good.
I've been listening and watching your chat room.
Yeah.
Primarily, recognition of poor communications in response to the actions of a person towards another person, the turning the other cheek idea, is denial. What I try and do is get them to recognize each other's communications and improve those to a level to where they're talking to each other as opposed to talking at each other and escalating into an anger issue.
Very good point. It sounds like you're talking as a therapist. You do.
I'm a forensic psychologist.
Ah, wonderful. Well, thank you for calling in.
No charge.
Thank God for that. You're implying, at least I hear it, that a situation in which you're working with two people, the couple are both present. And they are in relationship of some kind, let's say, in your office, right?
Okay.
And I certainly think that the objections that I, or the alternatives that I raised, I think are generally, let's say, background ones. And that if you're working, or if I'm working, or Jim is working with a couple in the office, then I think it's appropriate, maybe even essential, to broaden the issue so that it becomes one of communication in general, and then that can lead into a discussion of first, is it legitimate to disagree, and second, what kinds of disagreement are allowable in this relationship, and also the question of how free can I be to be myself?
Yeah.
At a certain, you know, if
that brings up a really good point, though. You're laying the groundwork for communications there, and recognition is a big part of where communication breakdowns take place. So what you're going to do is help them develop a behavior modification of recognition towards the trigger mechanisms that knock down the communications techniques. You're going to help them rebuild it from the ground up.
What kind of recognition are you referring to now?
Well, almost every one of these situations that I come into, somewhere along the line, there's a triggering mechanism, a term, an action, maybe even body format in the room, that sort of thing. There's always the white elephant in the room that they're avoiding. And if we can get that elephant out there and describe it and make them understand that this is what is leading them down the path of poor communications, we can eliminate the elephant, open the level of communications, develop new communication techniques through behavior modification, and improved their honesty and creativity and communications with each other to avoid the pitfalls that brought them there.
Sure, for sure. So you're suggesting as a first step, or nearly as a first step, a kind of broadened awareness where they become aware of triggers. Each of them becomes aware of a trigger in the other partner's behavior.
Sure.
Okay. And
there's a very large percentage of cases. There are a very large percentage of cases where neither party is aware that this is what got them there. And one of the things that I recommend to them, both of them, is when it starts to get heated, when they're alone together and these conversations come up and it starts to get heated, the first thing they do is one of them says, stop. How did we get to this point?
Mm-hmm.
And back up and backtrack from there. And it's as simplistic as it sounds, it has a very high percentage of success rate in slowing down the escalating combative communications.
Mm-hmm. Molo,
go ahead, Jim.
Molo, do you mind telling us where you practice, like what state or what area?
Well, I'm a subcontractor for usually government agencies. I've been working in violent crimes lockup facilities throughout Florida for a number of years. And this technique is basically coming from doing group therapy in a room full of maybe 17 or 18 kids who are in there with violent backgrounds of murder, attempted murder, armed robbery, vehicular things, all of this. When you walk into the Lion's Den to do group therapy with a group of kids that diversified, you find out very quickly how to recognize the triggering mechanisms and how to teach them to communicate to each other instead of at each other. It's sort of like Ringling Brothers walking into the lion's cage wearing a meat suit, you know. after you've done this for a few years, a husband and wife team are jello, you know, compared to that. So when you do this for a few years and then you get to talk to regular couples, I probably do a third of my work pro bono for my church. Because of couples that are in trouble, because it's positive, it's reinforcing for me to help them, and it's not as hard as working with maybe an adolescent serial killer, you know? Big difference.
Yes,
so earlier when David was talking about spiritual practice and, working on those issues internally, that's not something that you'd be encountering very much in your work in the prisons, but what you would especially with your couples work at church, and did you have a response or
I have a rule about spirituality. Mm-hmm. I let the patient, regardless of the venue, I let the patient mm-hmm. bring it up. If they address it, I go there. If they don't, mm-hmm. I leave it alone.
Right, but that wasn't my question.
Yeah.
My question was, whether you saw value, because you used the word, if you said earlier, if they're not bringing up their conflict, it's denial, and there's certainly a lot of people who would say that kind of Buddhist practices are denial in general, but in terms of dealing with a conflict internally and spiritually versus putting it out there to deal with it out in the moment with the person you're having some frustration with. Did you have a reaction to that kind of
I
situation?
Generally address that by saying, because you could see the wall. I mean, the wall was blatantly there in the methodology of communication between the couple. And what I would do is prior to bringing the two of them in together, I'd see each one of them separately for about 30 minutes and, you know, just work through what that person was feeling, what they were thinking, and get a baseline of where they were. And then once I had the two separately, I would bring them in together, because then I had a clear view of what each person's personal agenda was towards the problem, and the collective worked a lot better that way. Even though there might be some deniability there, I could, in separation, address that deniability and say, look, you know, you really need to bring this out and not let it fester, because this is undermining the work that we're going to be doing together. And
but you don't sort of credit the idea that they could be in a positive, healthy way dealing with that internally instead of bringing it out. So, I mean,
well, I credit the creativity to the individual for positive reinforcement.
Okay. All right.
And it works very well because it makes them feel like they're being rewarded for putting out that private piece that they weren't willing to give out before.
Okay.
It's an enticement, if you will, but it works very, very well.
Okay.
I'm giving away pearls here, man. I can't believe
you're
what?
You know, you're giving away what?
I'm giving away pearls here.
Okay. Right.
Just so you know, in the last facility.
Wait, let me throw an idea in, if I may.
Okay.
Maybe a bridge between my earlier, let's say, in a way, sort of fabricated. No, it wasn't fabricated. My earlier objection or alternative to open conflict, working on it yourself. I think there was a connection between that. And if I read you right, what you're doing with incarcerated kids or what you're doing with couples, and that connection is that in all three instances, what's being promoted is at least a beginning awareness of your own impact on somebody else. I mean, if we're talking about triggers, then part of that has to be a recognition of what it is you say or your body language that is a trigger to your partner. And if you begin to think about how I am affecting the other person, then I think that's the beginning of self-work, whether it's framed as spiritual work, a spiritual practice, or whether it's simply a practical application in cases of couples work or incarceration.
Well,
I think,
Molo,
would you agree
Molo,
with that?
I want to give Molo the last word, because we're going to go to Dr. Keister in just a minute. So,
okay.
Molo,
okay.
You've got the last word here.
Yeah, recognition is always the beginning steps of the groundwork to change, and that's one of the main things that I try and do with any patient, regardless of the venue, is get them to recognize what got them where they are and how they can take steps to change through maybe behavior modification or recognition of that action to change so that they don't repeat the experiment. First rule of science, repeat the experiment. We want to change that in bad behavior.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for calling in. Really appreciate your comments. And
no charge.
You said that, and we agree with you. Okay, well, call in again. I'd love to talk to you.
You
thanks
bet. Have a good day.
Okay.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Dr. Mark Kiefner, are you there?
Hey, guys. In contrast to that caller, I am going to charge you. You don't mind, do you?
We expected as much, Mark.
I'm emailing you a bill right now.
I'm very sad to hear that, because I know that you are really expensive. This is going to be very costly.
Well, I go to a meeting in the morning, and then I leave that meeting, and I try to find a few minutes to listen to you guys before I leap in, and I really love listening to you guys. It's just always sort of find myself feeling kind of relaxed and things kind of rising to the surface. And what today's conversation made me think about is how the maps that we use, which we guide our lives are these kind of memories of past experiences that we sort of weave into these maps to guide our future actions. And there's a lot of interesting memory research that kind of tries to address that. But in a practical kind of way, I think the struggle that all therapists have is exactly what the caller was just saying, which is how do you make those maps, which are unconscious, become more conscious? In other words, how do you recognize your own map? I always remember I don't remember if this is a Milton Erickson phrase or somebody else's phrase, but it's the map is not the territory.
Yeah.
You know, so...
No, that sounds like Ram Dass, actually.
Richard Elphick.
Yeah, I think it was. Or somebody from the East.
Maybe it's been used in many
places. Alan Watts, maybe, yeah.
But I think that's always the struggle, and I think that sort of goes right back to you guys about the question of how do you make unconscious maps conscious? How do you help people do that? That's my whole
part of that is creating safety.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be safe for people to begin to do that, I think, particularly if you're working in a public situation, let's say with another couple.
Right.
Yeah.
David, go ahead. You go ahead.
But David, I'm just curious, how do you create that sense of safety in a quick way with a couple in the beginning?
Here's a device that I sometimes use. It's a couple session, both people are present. I will take one of the two people to a different part of the room. I'll seat that person in a chair with his back to his partner. I'll give his partner an assignment to listen to the conversation that I'm going to have with the person who is apart with me in the room. And then to do the listener, I'll ask the listener to do his or her best to give a sympathetic explanation of what's been heard. And I'll be pretty strict about only hearing that. So the person who is now separate a little bit from relationship is talking with me. And if a new degree of candor comes out and something in the other partner's listening to it is expressed sympathetically, then that in itself may increase the amount of safety. I don't usually do that. I think you asked at the beginning, and maybe in a sense that doesn't apply at the very beginning. Mm. But I will break the connection between people if clearly they're triggering each other's behavior and the tension is rising in the room. I'll say, don't speak to him, speak to me. And then the other person will listen, so to speak.
I think one of the things that's very important is to really listen and communicate to each person that you really are hearing what they say, and that you respond on a level where you're accepting the emotion or the feeling behind it. You don't necessarily have to agree with, you know, what they're saying, especially if they're saying something negative about the other party, but you try to communicate to them that you understand and accept that it has an emotional resonance for them, and you resonate to that. And I think that can give people a sense of safety that they're going to be heard, not necessarily agreed with, but heard on a deep personal level. So that's part of where I go. Guys, we're out of time. Great show. Really excited that people called in. We had a bunch of people on the blog as well, I mean the chat as well. So that made it for a very exciting
yes,
show for me. So see you guys next week.
All right.
All right,
Angel Wilson,
Mark.
Take us away.
And then